Today on the 21st Show, a conversation with University of Illinois System President Tim Colleen on the Trump administration's challenges to higher education, how to continue pursuing truth in an age of alternative facts, and the higher education sector's loss of trust among broad parts of the American public.
We need to do a better job of expressing the good public uplift that comes from post-secondary education.
How much of the sector brought that on itself?
I think a significant piece, frankly.
I'm Brian Mackey with University of Illinois System President Tim Colleen for the hour today on the 21st Show, which is a production of Illinois Public Media, airing on WILL Urbana, WUIS Springfield, WGLT Bloomington Normal, WNIJ Rockford DeKalb, WVIK Quad Cities, and WSIU Carbondale. But first, news. From Illinois Public Media, this is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Higher education has been among the many important institutions of American life that have been targeted by the Trump administration. From pushing for administrators to resign or be fired, to revoking or threatening billions of dollars in federal research funding, to threatening to revoke international student visas, President Trump and his allies have sought to significantly curb the independence of colleges and universities. How are schools preparing for and responding to these threats? What would it mean for federal research money to go away or to be denied the opportunity to welcome students from around the world? And what do we lose if some of our society's most important fact and truth-seeking institutions are pressed to abandon that commitment? All this and more is on the mind of Tim Colleen, the president of the University of Illinois System. A scientist by training, before becoming an administrator, Colleen was a researcher in geophysics, which is a way of studying the Earth and the space around it through things like gravity, magnetism, and the like. The University of Illinois system consists of three main universities in Chicago, Springfield, and Urbana-Champaign, plus a hospital and health system, rural extension services across the state, and more. Colleen and I spoke last week on Monday in the Collins Studio at Illinois Public Media. You'll hear him make a reference to enrollment numbers coming out in the future. Those have already been published by now. Because our program is on tape, we're not taking calls today, but you can let us know what you think. Our email address, talk@21stshow.org. Again, talk@21stshow.org. President Colleen, welcome back to the 21st Show.
Thank you, Brian. Thanks for having me back.
So what does it mean when Americans stop trusting their universities?
Well, there has been an erosion of public trust and confidence in the higher ed sector, writ large, nationally. No question about that. Paradoxically, perhaps, trust in University of Illinois has been going the other direction. So we do annual surveys, so we're seeing some gain, at least in Illinois, of what we bring to the state of Illinois. And we're seeing it in word clouds, that where the word expensive is getting smaller, et cetera. Innovation is becoming a bigger word cloud. So we may, you know, I'm paid to say this, but we're a little bit of an outlier in terms of public trust and confidence in our university at this time. And I ascribe a lot of that to our commitment for keeping our quality up, world-class education at an affordable price in the state of Illinois and opening our doors ever wider. Now, that said, there's no question that there are headwinds on public trust and confidence. And they typically get couched in terms of too elite, too disconnected from the real realities of everyday life, kitchen, you know, table kind of issues. Affordability is a major concern, I think, of people. And then this question about, is a degree still worth it for social mobility and advancement? And I think we do have a narrative here that has positive responses to all of those critiques. And we try to document that in quantitative ways. But there's no question that our sector has been under, you know, a quizzical examination now for a few years. And I have to say that part of that is the responsibility of the sector, that we need to do a better job of expressing the narrative, expressing the good public uplift that comes from post-secondary education.
How much of the sector brought that on itself?
I think a significant piece, frankly.
In what ways?
I think a sense that, almost trust us. The cost thing was very significant, I think, over the last decade and a half. If you look at it in historic terms, you go back to the early 70s. That's when the federal government started to invest in post-secondary education. The states started to withdraw from post-secondary education, and that tilted the balance away from public funding towards more family funding through tuition rates. And I think you see in our whole sector, and we're not immune to this at the University of Illinois, you see an increase in tuition to the point where it becomes the question, is it still worth it? Now, we would argument vociferously that absolutely, yes, it's worth it. A dollar spent by a family in tuition returns itself multifold, $1 million earned more over a career, all those things we have now. But I think the sector brought it on itself through cost to some significant degree and a little disconnected from the realities of everyday life in a fast-changing environment. So we need to redouble our efforts in not just projecting a positive narrative, but having a positive narrative to project. And that's what we're trying to do, in a laser-like focus here at our university. We're trying to have that positive narrative, excellent, world-class education at an affordable price, open to anybody who's deserving, has worked hard to get here, and then good outcomes, right? Successful graduation rates, successful retention rates, good jobs that pay well going forward, whether you're in arts and humanities or, STEM fields. And that's really an important contribution. It's the public good that has to flow from our university. And so we have a great narrative. We're working on the substantive nature of that narrative. We need to do, frankly, a better job of articulating it out to the, and when we go on the state tour, we find good receptivity to the fact that our university is growing. We've kept our costs massively sub-inflationary for the last 10 years. We're committed to that. And it's a world-class education that launches careers into the future. And then we keep track of people. And there's some good objective metrics of positivity that we need to kind of express. Now, I warn you, Brian, I'm an optimist. So I always see a glass half full, right? I don't see many glass half, but I do acknowledge that public trust has eroded in our sector, and it's our responsibility to reclaim that.
I appreciate what you're saying about the glass being half full. And you raised a lot of points I do want to come back to in turn.
Very good.
Some people are picking up the glasses and throwing them against the wall, though, at this time. And so I want to ask you about some of those points in particular.
Okay.
How would you characterize the University of Illinois' relationship with the federal government and federal agencies right now?
Okay, we just have an hour to talk about this.
This is a Joe Rogan-length podcast. We can stay for three if you
want. Okay, very good. The federal government and federal agencies are very important partners for us, have been for many, many years. We have, at the University of Illinois system, about $800 million a year in federal funding from grants and contracts that we win competitively. So when agencies change their outlook, change the guidance, we follow that very closely and carefully. The executive orders coming out of the White House, we followed very carefully. First thing to say is we are a law-abiding institution that's not partisan, right? We are apartisan, but we do care about our students. So we're fiercely partisan for our students, every student, no matter where they come from, what they look like, what their background has been. We want them to succeed, whether they're international or domestic. All of that is our kind of core commitment. So there's been significant changes coming at a bewildering pace, in fact, in the last year, I would say, or certainly 6 months. So we're paying very close attention to that. We're being, we're committed to, the 1967 anti-discrimination civil rights. That's a benchmark for us. So we will follow that. Now, if the guidance changes, we will look at it. We'll analyze it. We have our attorneys looking at what's coming at us. We're being appropriately, I think, compliant of regulations that are changing. That relationship is important to us because what we do has national scale and impact and importance. And it differs by agency, I would have to say. So we saw the USAID issues early on, and that affected us directly, particularly
job losses and funding.
They've been partially recovered through anonymous donation, but that was a significant thing. And painful there, Brian, was the loss of sort of preparing for the future of soybean food internationally in places like Malawi, where we've seen significant job loss, but also a significant pulling back of modernization of the whole agricultural enterprise. And we care about those other countries too. So we're seeing a lot of changes. We're working hard to be discerning and to be thoughtful about our response. In each case, we have our grounded set of guiding principles of who we are and what we do and what we care about that guide us, and we are law-abiding and will always be that. So I think it's been a challenge, I'd say a challenging time for higher education in general. At the University of Illinois, we've not been disproportionately affected, but we have been affected. And we're adjusting to the guidance that's coming out of the federal establishment, paying close attention to it too with our best thinkers. We're also working collectively across the Big Ten, obviously. We're working with our partners in professional associations in DC, like ACE or APLU. We're interacting significantly with peer institutions and professional associations to more deeply understand what's coming, to predict, to ask the what if questions, frankly, that are needed. So we kind of are looking at ourselves as well deeply. What if this happens, that happens? So how well prepared, how resilient are we to those kinds of changes? And
what if the government cancels every visa for every one of our students, or what if the government takes away all of our research funding, sort of thing?
Those are good what if questions that we've had on the list. Absolutely. On the visa issue, we did see like 71 visas revoked. They were unrevoked shortly thereafter.
So revoked and then unrevoked,
if that's a word.
Yes, I follow you.
So we did have one person self-deport. So we haven't seen a massive, and there's been no recent, issues. But visa delays are significant for us. These are international students who have been accepted to our university. They need to get a visa. They need to get an interview in a consulate somewhere internationally. Those have been significantly delayed. But we're monitoring very closely the international student population coming in. And tomorrow we have the official numbers coming out, which I kind of know what they're like, but I can't divulge them because we're going to have a rollout. They're going to be robust, and robust as well on the international student side, despite visa slowdowns. But we have some issues in certain areas. Now, the what if question that you posed, what if they all go away, or what if something happens internationally, say with Chinese students, those are significant issues that we're looking at as well, to make sure that we're resilient and we're grounded in our mission and our sets of values, and we're compliant with all appropriate laws.
What does that mean, looking at? Because, is it, potentially thousands of students not coming here?
We have 97,000 students last year. You're going to see a higher number tomorrow. That's a large group of students of the undergraduate population. Of every five undergraduates, I like to use my hand for this, four are from the state of Illinois, almost 80%, not quite, like 79.7%. So we have a strong commitment to in-state, college-ready students. And that's if you drive around this town, which I'm sure you do, they're all everywhere. You can see them, right? If you try to get across town when classes are changing, you'll see what I mean. We have a lot of mostly young people but 20% are from out of state. So that's a more vulnerable population with some of the issues and concerns of the federal government. We'll still be here no matter what, but when I say looking at it, we're looking at the fiscal implications of rapid change in enrollments and tuition rates. We're looking at the fiscal implications of loss of grants, terminated grants. So we have had those. We've had some of those. But our research volume is still over $1 billion, $1.4 billion last year. So we're looking at the financial implications. We're also looking at what I am concerned about, which is anxiety and trepidation that, you know, when you don't know, when you can't predict the future very clearly and another shoe drops over there, even if it doesn't affect you directly today, there's some concerns that that might be expressed as well. So, so students, staff, faculty, yeah, everybody's paying attention to the news media. And I am too, but I limit my outrage to like 20 minutes a day. That's enough. That's fine. Get on with the rest of the day.
That's just one segment of our show. Huh?
Well, yeah. I'm joking, of course, but
That, there's probably something healthy to that, though.
You've got to look after yourselves, and we need to look after these, particularly these young people who are leaving their homes perhaps for the first time, coming to a very, you know, different kind of setting, reading the newspapers, on social media, exposed to a lot of things, and we're concerned about mental health of our students, staff, and faculty as well. So we're working on all of those fronts.
Let me take a moment to reintroduce our program. We're listening to a conversation recorded last week with Tim Killeen, president of the University of Illinois System. Of course, that includes the three main universities, Urbana-Champaign, Chicago, and Springfield, as well as a healthcare system, rural extension services all across the 21st state. We spoke on Monday in the Collins studio. We were going to bring this conversation out earlier, but we delayed it because of the news involving the assassination of Charlie Kirk last week. Because our program's on tape, we're not taking calls, but you can always let us know what you think. Our email address, talk@21stshow.org. More to come after a break. This is The 21st Show. It's The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. If you're just joining us, we are listening back to a conversation I recorded last week with Timothy Killeen, the president of the University of Illinois System. We taped this on Monday last week. We were going to bring it to you later in the week, but we ended up delaying it so we could cover the assassination of Charlie Kirk. Because our program's on tape today, no phone calls, but you can always let us know what you thought. Our voicemail line is 217-300-2121. You can leave us a message anytime, day or night, 217-300-2121. All right, let's get back to my conversation with University of Illinois President Tim Killeen. You know, as you know, and you've sort of alluded to some of the issues, particularly with international students. I mean, the State Department says it's going to be revoking visas for Chinese students in certain fields and those with ties to the Chinese Communist Party. I wonder how you respond to concerns that some international students might pose security risks, and American universities have not been taking those seriously enough.
Well, we're aware of those criticisms, and we're doing everything we can think of to make sure that our approach is watertight and that we're not stepping on landmines or anything like that. We do look carefully at our student body to make sure it's hardworking. We're proud of our students, extremely proud. They work hard. They perform well. We know all the regulations. We watch the, you know, the changing language that comes out. We know which universities in China might be on which lists, and so we're very cognizant of all of the above. But we're committed to the vibrancy that our international students bring to our programs, as well as I mentioned, you know, the preponderance of undergraduates from the state of Illinois. I think it enlivens their experience too. So. We are going through the what ifs as well. I mean, a few years ago, we took out an insurance policy against abrupt changes in Chinese student enrollment, so we're
no longer in effect, as I understand.
No longer, that's yeah. No longer in effect. Yeah, that's right. That's correct.
You talked earlier about the value of a college education and making the case that there is still value at a time when a lot of people say, you know, maybe it's been overvalued in recent years. For example, the St. Louis Fed recently noted an increase in unemployment among young college graduates aged 23 to 27, higher than the increase among people in that age range who did not go to college. Is it worth it, or make the case, you know, how you sustain the value of a college degree as opposed to, say, trade school, specifically a University of Illinois education?
Yeah, well, we can make the case, and there's a report coming out in a few weeks that we will be taking on the road on our road tour that demonstrates that economic value, the pocket value of a degree from the University of Illinois. We've assessed that. We brought in outside consultants to look at all of the aspects of that. And so we can make the really strong, cogent case that, yeah, it's of value. Now, you mentioned trade schools. They're important too. So we see public education as not just delimited by the four-year in and out degree that we specialize in, or even the graduate degree that we specialize in, but we look at it as pre-K, K through 12, teacher preparation, community colleges, and we've got very strong relationships with community colleges. Now, transfer student population is going up. It's over 4,000 now and growing. Then we see it as, what happens after your degree? How do you get to the degree and what happens afterwards? What about adults who may have some form of college credit but don't have the credential or the degree? We need to work. We need to take responsibility for that. There's some 4 million people in Illinois that are in that category. They would like to get the credential that would help them in their professional development. That's part of the overall mission. Lifelong learning as well. So it's a whole spectrum. We need to do our piece of that really, really well. But we have 3 colleges of education that study how cognitive gain from different populations, all the way going back to, childhood nutrition issues and so forth. We need to take account of that whole spectrum. You might call it a set of pathways for intellectual growth and development of people at different levels. And so trade school is an incredibly important piece of that. So we support them. We are working intensely with them on making sure that credits that are obtained at community colleges are applicable, people can transfer with fewer impediments. That's really important. We know, for example, that the majority of students going into a 2-year school in the state of Illinois aspire to a 4-year degree, and a minority of those who aspire to a 4-year degree get their 4-year degree. So there are problems in this whole pathway, you know, that need to be optimized to make sure that people don't get lost in the cracks, that there's no rebuffing of talent, that there are opportunities. It's almost like we need to use personalized educational pathways to continue to refine the whole process of higher education in the public domain. We're an important thought leader in that, have been for many years. First educational software, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So your question is a broader one. It's not a us versus them. The value of our degree, though, is absolutely. I'll give you the big number. What our dollar impact on the state of Illinois is annually, it's over $24 billion a year. And that's independent of the stock market going up and down. That's just the value. If you were to take University of Illinois out, the state would be $24 billion less well off. That shows, and at $1 returns $7 back to the tax base. So we like to make the case, as strong as anybody will care to listen to us, that this is a profit center, an investment by the state in us, returns back to the state more than any retirement program I've ever heard of. But we need to do it well. We need to do it with integrity. We need to do it with effective stewardship of the resources, but to do it at scale. That's kind of what we're trying to do and succeeding in at University of Illinois. Our scale is growing. Our affordability has gotten better as inflation has marched up. And we still have this vibrant, world-class educational system that pays off in so some of those critiques are valid for very expensive schools, if I can say that. For public, large, comprehensive state schools like ours, they're not as valid. And I think we can demonstrate, we'll share the report with you on the economic impact. We did it a few years ago and it was $19 billion. Now it's $24
billion. You mentioned three colleges of education in the study that they're doing. That does put me in mind, though, that occasionally you hear from Illinois legislators, why do we have so many colleges of education at all these different universities? Why do we have so many theater programs? And then you start getting into the question of, you know, should higher education be more focused on sort of, no offense to anyone, but, you know, sort of technical skills, usable skills, things that'll get people jobs, right? As opposed to more humanities and things like that. And Indiana, for example, you may be aware of this, their state legislature had this, demanded a review, and low enrollment programs were cut at a lot of schools there. Some people say higher education needs to be more efficient. How are you thinking about those issues? How do you respond to that?
Yeah, I think there. I think higher education needs to look at itself all the time in a continuous improvement. Two things can be true at the same time. The job types of the future are morphing and changing. There's no question that entry-level coding is now being replaced to some extent by AI machines and so forth. We're looking into that. We're looking at what the kind of skills and competencies are needed, projected into the future, with a technical kind of a digital kind of, and our programs in those fields are expanding fast. We're you know, topped out in some ways with computer science and so forth, and that's continuing, but it's changing its nature. So the kinds of skills and competencies are going to be different into the future than they were 10 years ago, absolutely. It's also true at the same time that a comprehensive educational system that includes the arts, the humanities, the social sciences, the engineering is the right, and I voted with my feet to be part of that. It provides the full complexity of human life and well-being into the future. And each component adds value to every other component. So now if a program's so small that no students are signing up, okay, we don't need that program anymore, right? Or if it's below some kind of threshold, yes. But there are other components that can be built in. We're seeing like a lot of uptake right now on digital tools being applied to dance and architecture and music and so forth. We're able to do that because we have a comprehensive land grant kind of perspective on how the future is evolving. I believe that the comprehensive nature of our university system with its multiplicity can be optimized in a continuous improvement way to serve the kind of society we want to see unfold into the future. And that if we were to drop music or drop elements of the arts, then we would lose something. Now, other universities have gone down that path and they're focused on the engineering, and we're very strong in engineering. So we do it all. I'm pretty proud that we're able to cover the waterfront in that, because the elements of not just problem solving and making money in a commercial sense have to be connected to human welfare and just the joy of life, which is really important too. And our young people really need to be exposed to many, many such elements. So we're not going to go and shut, you know, not going to go down the same path as Indiana, at least I hope not, although I don't want to criticize what they're doing. It may be perfect for their situation. But here we have a vibrancy that's across the arts, humanities, social sciences, engineering, mathematics, STEM, professional fields, healthcare delivery, et cetera, clinical excellence. We run the state's hospital. All of that together gives us the $24 billion, and it gives us like a platform for co-creating what you might think of, I know this is abstract, but goodness in society going forward. And I think that's what Illinois needs and should stand for. So, yeah, with every board meeting, there is usually a program or two that gets truncated because of low uptake. But are we closing our doors on big elements? No.
What about, you mentioned accessibility and technical education. There was a push in the Illinois legislature this year from the governor himself to have 4-year degrees be granted by certain community colleges, junior colleges in Illinois. What do you think of that idea?
I think it's, we actually were neutral on that particular bill. We didn't oppose it. I think we feel that anything that provides additional opportunities are essentially good things for people to take up. I think if you get overlapping kinds of duplicative programs, it's not necessarily the most effective use of resources. So I think you've got to avoid those kinds of things. But I think this is a movement towards more of this sort of seamless transition in learning, that it's not one size fits everybody, and that there are many paths to nirvana, sometimes I say, and every individual can pick their own path to have that opportunity, possibility. I know the governor is behind that, and it's brought it forward, and so we're looking carefully at that, what it would mean for us. But I don't think it materially changes how we go about things in the University of Illinois system. There are 46 community colleges. We're in contact with all of them. We're working on what we call seamless transfer of credits. We anticipate to be partnering very closely with them. We do see an uptick in transfers. You know, as I said, we've been focusing on that a lot. It's 4,000 plus now. They do really well. So students who've gone through a 2-year experience at a current community college, they're slightly older typically, they're perhaps more mature, they do really well at the University of Illinois. They're not like below some, you know, norm line that a first-time freshman would attain. So we're delighted when transfer students come to our doors. They do well.
Earlier, we talked about state funding and state's role in public education funding. And as you well know, there's been a long secular decline in that over many decades now. There was legislation in the General Assembly this year that would have sought to bring some more equity to new funding, as it was framed by the sponsors, SIU, Edwardsville, Western Illinois, and Macomb. Even the University of Illinois, Chicago, and Springfield, both of which are at 55% of what was determined to be adequate funding in this context. The U of I system opposed those changes. The legislation didn't pass. What do you say to leaders at other universities who say they need more support?
I say they do need more support. I think the secular changes that you alluded to, going back decades, as you mentioned, have damaged the overall infrastructure of public higher education in the state of Illinois to the extent that there's a lot of deferred maintenance needs. There's been a slow decline in enrollment elsewhere. We've seen our enrollment grow, but we're competing with out other states essentially to keep our talent in the state. We're not competing with the Eastons, Westons, etc. So there's some issues here with optimizing the whole state's public and more money or more resources, more support is completely warranted. It's how do you go about doing that? And we're of opinion at U of I that outcomes are important to incentivize graduation rates, participation in civil society, the special roles of extension and of public health delivery, clinical excellence. Were not really reflected heavily in the bill proposed. So we will continue to be involved in those kind of conversations as they go forward, as I'm sure they will. And we're completely supportive of more resources being brought to the table, including, and I'd say especially, for universities that are struggling.
Let me take a moment to reintroduce our conversation. If you're just joining us, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking with Timothy Killeen, the president of the University of Illinois system. We're talking about the challenges to higher education, both from the Trump administration as well as from a broader decline in trust among members of American society with what's happening in universities. After the break, we're going to dig into the potential consequences of that drop in trust in one of the main fact-seeking institutions in American life. This is The 21st Show. Stay with us. It's The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Let's get back to my conversation with University of Illinois System President Tim Killeen. Of course, the U of I system has three main universities in Springfield, Urbana-Champaign, and Chicago. There's also extension services for rural areas across the state, as well as a healthcare system. We recorded this conversation last week at the Collins Studio at Illinois Public Media in Urbana. For the last part of the program, I wanted to dig into some of the broader implications of this declining trust and this attack from the federal government on higher education, which of course is one of the main truth-seeking, one of the main fact-seeking institutions in American life. What are the consequences of that? I want to come back to some of the big picture topics that are animating a lot of the discussion on higher education in America right now. How do you define academic freedom in 2025?
The definitions of academic freedom were codified in the 60s, and we are strong adherents to the role of academic freedom. It's an area that sometimes is a little misunderstood. It gives complete freedom to express anything about any topic that you might imagine, or it's something that's germane to your professional association. The idea of academic freedom was to enable free experimentation and in the intellectual domain by university professors, and that is still really important. The moment you start to constrain, then the inventiveness can be lost very quickly. If you say you can only work on this, or you had to do it this way, that's not the freedom of intellectual vibrancy that's been present in U.S. Universities and has led to an economy that's the envy of the world, as people like to say often. So academic freedom is an important building block for creating the kind of knowledge base to support human endeavor going forward and to create the kind of citizenry that's going to be important to. I like to say that the U.S. is like 4.5% of the world's population, and yet look how significant we are in terms of building out capabilities and technologies in the future. So we have to live off our wits, in essence. We have to really, live with intellectual vibrancy. Academic freedom is incredibly important for that. So that's the thing I would stress, is that if you lose it and you become constrained to whatever the political wind is at the moment, then that ability to create new knowledge, which has really led to this explosion of capabilities, in the U.S. You just look at, energy or IT or digital or whatever it is, would be damaged. So I think it's important at the University of Illinois to recruit great scholars to our table, to have them explore information, knowledge, to have them be able to teach and, express themselves in learning sessions, so that the students can open their eyes and minds to things beyond what they may have been, directly associated with in their upbringing. So I think it's really that important, Brian.
It's interesting you say in learning sessions, because I gather that does not necessarily include with a bullhorn on the quad. But where do you see the threats to academic freedom, right? Some people look and say it's the government, and certainly I wouldn't argue with that. Some other people say it's liberal orthodoxy. If you step out of line from that, there's been maybe it's not government censorship, but social stigma or something like that.
Yeah, well, I think any of those things can negatively affect, an institution that is living on its wits, as I kind of like to point out. If it's overly prescriptive and limiting. The bullhorn on the quad, if there's not an exam taking place right next door, is an expression of public opinion, right? So there's some rules that need to be followed. We do have rules, and we do We do expect our communities to follow those rules. And we don't pick our incoming professors with a particular political slant. We work well with a bipartisan state legislature. We work well with the federal state legislature. We're up and down the state. We really try to be apartisan in that. Now, as intellectual work develops, you get, you know, a lot of people are critical about what's going on over there and over there and over there. And we need to be discerning about what is really egregious and what is just the norm for a vibrant, university where ideas are assessed, discussed, etc. We don't expect our students to come and never be exposed to things that get their jaws to drop and, you know, make them uncomfortable. But on the other hand, it can't be a hostile environment for learning, right? So we've got to use discernment in all of those arenas.
There was a time in the recent past when universities and other institutions in American life, corporations, were very quick to respond to express sympathy or solidarity with this or that episode from 2020 and 2023. In that era, people can fill in their own, incidents that they want to look at in that time. It seems like that's happening a lot less. Has that been a conscious decision on the part of the University of Illinois system to step back from taking sides and very controversial questions that divide people here, for example?
I think we've always, we don't over comment on public events because we don't have agency on, impacting them. When a group of students are really concerned about something, we will do what we can to reassure them that they're welcome here, that this is a place for them to thrive and prosper. And so we're cautious about putting out many messages that might be seen as some as overly politicized or as others as picking winners in a world where, so we have students of all types. We have lots of Jewish students. We have lots of Palestinian students. We have Russian students. We have Ukrainian students. We have faculty of different persuasions, political persuasions.
And pressure to take their side, to take this group's side or that group's side in a lot of cases.
Well, there will be people who don't hold back their worldviews on things. Absolutely, yeah.
And so, would like you to side with their worldviews or act in a way that they think would be in accordance.
That has happened on occasion.
Yes.
And so we typically look at our grounded principle, who we are, what we're meant to be, what we were designed to be. We're an educational institution, right? We are open doors. We are enabling of knowledge, new knowledge creation in all of the disciplines, like ethics in AI, for example, and music and digital, whatever it happens to be. We want our students to succeed, which means, incidentally, that we care about every student. And some students need a certain set of parameters to help them thrive and prosper. Other students need a different set of parameters to help them survive and prosper. Sometimes that's called, a differential. But we want all of our students, no matter where they come from, what they look like, to succeed. And so we want to optimize around the individuals. But it's a huge group, as you well know. So we can't individually coddle every student with 24 hour, so I think all of this is part of how we think about. And so when we put a message out, particularly if it's a mass mail, a lot of thought goes into that. And we would think carefully about, how does this sound to this group? How does this sound to that group? And the messages you may be referring to took a balanced approach. They didn't take sides in ways that maybe are alleged or might be alleged, or the absence of statements. This is what makes this period interesting, challenging. But if we do our job really well, which I claim we are, we're graduating 27,000 students who go on and change the world, right? They come from every discipline. They get jobs. Of every four undergraduates graduating, three stay in Illinois, which is why our impact on Illinois is so high, because our graduates live, work, play, and vote in the state of Illinois. So we're very proud of that. That's our essential job. There are a lot of pitfalls to avoid.
Yeah.
There are no question about that.
Going even higher, 30,000 feet, 40,000 feet. Jonathan Rauch, the writer and thinker, has this idea of the constitution of knowledge, which he says is our society's way of keeping ourselves tethered to reality. And he puts science, media, law, and government in that. And I think the University of Illinois, a public institution, has a role in all those areas. What do you think we stand to lose as our society continues to lose touch with reality, right? Lose touch with facts. How are you thinking about that?
Well, I'm a remote sensing scientist, right, who has to believe what the instrument is saying. So facts and evidence is everything, right? You can make things up. But I think it's really important to have evidence-based decision making best you can, where you take all of the inputs in and avoid obvious misstatements of fact. Now people say truth is in the eye of the beholder and et cetera, et cetera. But we have to be relentless pursuers of knowledge. And some of that's new knowledge. So it needs to sort of, I always remember, a former mentor said, if you're really operating at the horizon of knowledge, the forward hemisphere is black. There are no breadcrumbs to follow, right? Nobody's been there before. So we have to be that ambitious to expanding the envelope of knowledge, but it needs to be based on what we understand of nature and of human responses and use all of the tools at our disposal of mathematics, science, etc. I think that's really important. I think that's what the University of Illinois is known for, frankly. So you're touching on a lot of the things that we think through and talk about all the time. Again,
and yet a lot of people don't want to believe. Like, who are you? Who are you?
Yeah.
You're remote sensing. Why should I trust your ability as a scientist?
You have
Who anointed you, God?
Nobody. And I have to say that. You have to earn trust over time. And a university as stellar as this has earned trust that we should not dissipate or should not, lose by going down a path of, my interest is in X, so you better follow me, right? Because universities should not be false prophets in that way, right? But that said, there's got to be a lot of discussion, a lot of experimentation as well. If you look at, despite what we started talking about, erosion of public trust and confidence, there's still significant trust in the academic sector for bringing facts to the table that are actionable. And I think that's really important into the future because we're going to have to develop human welfare, it's one of my little bugbears is the word sustainability could be thought of as being like a miserable future, right? But it's sustainable, okay, like the Blade Runner movie or something like that. So I try to use the word thrivable. So a future that where we can actually thrive. I'm a grandparent.
We don't want to be sustenance.
Not just sustenance,
livers,
but
yes,
actually thriving. That's going to come about. And I don't know if you got, I've got grandkids, so I'm thinking about this. We need to build towards a better future where human beings can thrive and not overutilize resources so it mortgages the future for their successes as well. This is all something that universities like ours have to do. If you really push me on this, I would say that American universities have to do it. I would say public American universities have to do it. Then I would go further and say research-intensive public universities have to do it. That are in a state like Illinois, which if it was a country would be G18 or G20, so we're big. It's got water, air, land, arable soil. It's got all the things. So we have a responsibility to create a better future. And we do that through human capital development, and we do it through new knowledge creation. in ways that could hopefully build towards a thrivability into our future. And if we do that authentically, trust will follow. That's my, we could hit a landmine or two and some scandal or something throws us off kilter. But if we keep our eye on that, with the comprehensive nature of the intellectual exploration, we're getting very philosophical here, or at least I am, in answer to your questions. So,
I appreciate that. Yeah. I think that's probably as good a place as any to end our conversation. Okay. President Killeen, thank you for being with us.
Thank you very much, Brian, and thank you for your questions.
Tim Killeen is the president of the University of Illinois System. That's all the time we have for today. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.